Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMCortho.
Good afternoon again. The time is now 2:09 and 12 seconds, and you're on the Vox Pop Medical Monday. Joining us in the studio today for Medical Monday is Dr. Allen, A-L-L-E-N, the wrong way, Gerber. He is board-certified neurologist with Albany Medical Center's Neurosciences Institute. He specializes in movement disorders and the treatment of multiple sclerosis. But today, we're going to do a show on multiple sclerosis. That's what we want you to call about. Everybody knows people with it. I've had several friends who have it. An autoimmune disease that affects the central nervous system. Dr. Gerber earned his medical degree in the UNE School of Medicine in Mexico. He completed his internship at New York Medical College, his residency in neurology at St. Vincent's Catholic Medical Center, and a fellowship in movement disorders from Yale University School of Medicine. Surely you've heard of Yale. Dr. Gerber, welcome. You're so welcome to be here.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here, Alan.
Well, you're terrific for doing it. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop, and all like that. You can send us an email at voxpop@wamc.org. Now, folks, as you know, you get somebody of this caliber on here, and you will find that every phone in the place goes off, and so therefore, this is the time to get in line. And Alan, I'm delighted to have you here because I've wondered about the causation of this terrible disease, MS. Do we know what it is?
We know that it's an autoimmune disease. So what an autoimmune disease is when, for some reason, unbeknownst to us 100%, but our own body attacks ourselves. In the case of multiple sclerosis, it's a specific myelin disease. So when our body's immune system gears up to maybe attack a virus or a bacteria, it inadvertently sees our own myelin as foreign.
And what is myelin again?
Myelin is the insulation that wraps around nerves.
Okay.
And what happens is the nerves transmit information from one part of the body to the other. If you want to move your arm, you've got to send the message from your brain to your arm. If there's lack of myelin in the brain in that part of the body, your arm will move a lot more slowly.
So what made you take MS as your specialty?
I thought of it as a real, real challenge. When I see, unfortunately, mainly young women in the prime of their lives.
Is that true? Is it a young woman's disease?
It's 3-to-1.
Really?
And it used to be 1-to-1, and then it became like 2-to-1. And we know that the incidence is rising in women, and we don't know why.
And we don't have even a basic hypothesis?
Well, we know that genetics are involved. We know that environmental triggers are involved. We know that other factors such as estrogens and smoking and...
Same sort of stuff as in breast cancer, in other words.
Yes. We know that the hormones play a major role. For example, women don't get MS flare-ups when they're pregnant. And that's was the subject of a recent study that I read from ECTRIMS this year, where... estrogens were given to women in conjunction with their MS medicine, and the women that had the combination of estrogen plus their MS medicine did better than just MS medicine alone. And the estrogen moved the women into a mid-stage of pregnancy level. And so it's a major clue to how we may treat MS in the future.
Fascinating stuff. How pervasive is MS in this country?
Unfortunately, there's about 400,000 people in the United States with MS, and there's about 2.5 million in the world.
And there are slower onsets, right, and faster?
MS can present differently, and it can progress differently, and everybody's a little bit different. Unfortunately, MS can hit young people. It can hit children. It hits women in the prime of their life.
And so what are some of the other associative things, like smoking?
Smoking, for example, if you have MS, the worst thing in a way that you don't want to have happen is move to what's called the relapsing remitting form, where you have attacks and get better, attacks and get better. You don't want to progress to what's called a secondary progressive form, but because that is a stage where the medicines don't work so well. But if you have smoked, let's say before the age of 15, you have about a 70% chance of moving into that secondary progressive phase. If you smoked after the age of 15, it goes down to about 40. But if you never smoked, it goes down to about 26.
Do we know why? We don't know.
We don't. There's some toxic elements in the smoke. We don't know exactly why, but it's so powerful that I spend a lot of the time in my clinic, if anyone smokes, working on smoking cessation. I think it's never been a time more than now to get people to stop smoking.
And one last question before we go to the phones. Whoops, somebody just disappeared. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to go to the phones in a minute, folks. 1-800-348-2551. I want you to call. I want you now. And we'll be happy to answer any questions. But you mentioned your clinic. I've never quite understood what a clinic is.
Yeah, so a clinic is a place where we try to provide what we call comprehensive care. Patients with MS require not only making the right diagnosis, which for me is the most important first step, but once we made that diagnosis and then we pick a drug that's right for them, then there are a lot of secondary issues. For example, about 60% of patients with MS have some cognitive issues, and we can make referrals to do cognitive testing and cognitive training. Another 20-30% of people with MS have trouble with bowel and bladder. And so we'll make a recommendation to one of the docs at Albany Med that specializes in that.
I always thought that clinics were places you just dropped in on and sat in a chair till it was your turn.
Yeah.
No,
well,
that's
clinic's got a bad name, but yeah. We try to make it a really friendly place where people get their care.
1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in on this important conversation, whether you have a friend or a loved one or a girlfriend or a boyfriend, your chances of getting in on this are 100% right now. 100%. Even if you just want to hear your voice on the radio, 1-800-348-2551. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do, Zach. We're going to take a short break, and then we will come right back, and we'll take your calls, and you'll be there, won't you? Because this is your chance to ask a question.
Support comes from Nathan Latour Hospital, Gloversville, New York, less than 50 minutes from the Capital District, offering minimally invasive procedures for back pain with Dr. Ja'an Shen, NLH.org. Lori Stilwell, CPAPC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond, StilwellCPA.com. Ellis Medicine, a comprehensive healthcare network served by more than 600 physicians, reinventing healthcare one patient at a time. 1-844-518-DOCS for appointments and referrals. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. Rensselaer County Historical Society and the Van Rensselaer Garden Club, presenting the 58th Annual Holiday Green Show in the Hart Cluett House, December 4th through December 8th, rchs.org. And Buttermilk Falls Spa, Milton, New York, featuring treatments using organic natural products and offering a solar geothermal heated sauna, steam room, and pool. Open daily, buttermilkspa.com.
And we are back. So let's go to our friend Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Thanks for calling, Jim. Here we go. You're on, Jim.
Have you seen any increase in patients that have received low-dose Clostridium botulinum toxins?
I have not seen that as a trigger for multiple sclerosis. I'm sorry, Jim.
So, Jim, what was your question based on?
Well, I had friends that had both, and I was just wondering if they were seeing any increase in that.
Okay, Jim, you got your answer. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right, let's go to Oliver. Oliver in Pittsfield, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I recently saw a TED Talk that's been circulating on the internet for some time now. It's a doctor who's afflicted with MS, and she talks about nutrition as playing a huge role in overcoming some of her symptoms. And I don't often hear doctors talk a lot about nutrition with diseases like this. And I was wondering if you could comment on that and where you think or how you think nutrition plays a role.
Okay, here you go. All right.
I think that's a great question. Nutrition is basically everything we take into our body, whether we take it in as a food or whether we get exposed to it in our environment. One of the major things about nutrition that we've learned recently that modulates the immune system and hence MS is the importance of vitamin D as a nutritional factor. One of the things that got me interested in studying MS a number of years ago was a group of studies that came out of Canada with children who had MS, and these kids had what's called clinical isolated syndrome, where they just had like maybe one little thing that looked like it could be MS or could not be MS. And when they studied those kids out over time, they realized that the kids who had a low vitamin D, they were the ones that progressed to the clinical definite MS.
Do you have an amount of D that we should be taking, or is it related to how much D you're showing in your body?
I always check. Normal ranges are about 30 to 100, and I like to keep my patients around 50 or 60.
Yeah.
And what it takes to do that is about, I don't want to give an exact amount because I don't want people just taking an amount. You really should have your doctor check your level and then give you an amount that you need.
Yeah, is there something that's too much of vitamin D?
You can get toxic if it's greater than 100, but we rarely see that.
Yeah,
so you do have to
be
careful.
I take 5,000 a day myself, for whatever it's worth. Well, hey, Oliver, any other questions on this?
I was just wondering if he had actually seen the TED Talk and what he maybe thought specifically about that.
I did see that talk, actually, and I felt that... there's a lot to it. There was not any actual imaging data to her talk, and so I was a little skeptical, but I do know that we have information about celiac disease, which we know can actually damage certain parts of the brain, like the cerebellum, and cause difficulty with coordination. And so I have no doubt that different substances in our food can act on specific people in specific ways to make their immune system worse. And a small percentage of people have been found to have gluten problems with MS. It's a low number, and you should have your doctor check you if you suspect that.
So, Oliver, all the phones are ringing, and let you go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Mark in Salem. Okay, Mark, you're on.
Hi, Alan. I also take 4,000 units of D3 every day. I was curious, is there a connection or is there a similarity between Parkinson's and MS?
Kind of a good question. There have been some thoughts that Parkinson's might be immunologic, but it's not really in the forefront at this time, and I'm not sure I want to comment on that.
And if it's the myelin that gives you leads to the MS or something like that, is there such a thing that we can say about Parkinson?
Well, Parkinson's is a very, very specific disease where a particular neurotransmitter in the brain, dopamine, in a particular part of the brain is depleted.
Yeah.
And so of a lot of the neurologic diseases, that's one of the clearest etiologies that we know causes it. In MS, it's an autoimmune disease against our own myelin.
Parkinson's is not an autoimmune disease, then.
Not generally considered autoimmune.
Okay. All right. My uncle, who never smoked and was, he's in his early 70s, and he's been suffering with Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. And I also have some neighbors who have MS, and I just wondered if there was any connection between the two.
Good question. I think for simplicity's sake, I would keep them separate.
Okay. Mark, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to Rob and Troy. Rob and Troy, you're on.
Hi, thank you. Sure. I have been diagnosed with transverse myelitis, though there was some concern and some suggestion that I actually had MS. I'm a male over 60, and the consensus was that was unlikely.
Okay, so let's stop right there. Itis always means it's a sort of a screwed upness of the of something or other, you know. So so transfer myelitis, doctor, is what?
So it's an infection in the spinal cord. And it could be either an infectious cause or an autoimmune cause. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're 60 and you had just transverse myelitis and no lesions in the brain, no lesions in the any other part of the nervous system other than that one spot, then it's possible, depending on what tests you had, that you'd get an accurate diagnosis. For example, if they did a spinal tap and they found that there was an infection and then that infection went away and was treated, you may not develop MS at all, but sometimes mm-hmm. a transverse myelitis is the first sign of multiple sclerosis. We have to put it together with other features.
Yeah, apparently I do have lesions in my brain. I've had no change in my condition in the 3.5 years since I came down with it. But I was initially diagnosed, or the first neurologist who I saw in the ER when I came down with it was insistent that I had Guillain-Barré syndrome.
Well,
and then another doctor said that maybe the Guillain-Barré syndrome caused the transverse myelitis, and so I'm still confused after multiple doctors and 3.5 years of the condition.
Well, did you have a spinal tap that showed?
I've had two, and it's just a lovely experience.
And did it show that you had what are called oligoclonal bands or not?
That I don't know, particularly because one of the spinal taps, I was panicked because I was just coming down with the condition, and nothing much stuck in my head at that point.
Rob, one of the things that we often do if we're not sure of a diagnosis is we repeat the imaging. And for example, if after a year or two you have no new lesions and you don't have any clinical symptoms of anything, then you may be able to relax a little bit. If you do have new lesions on the repeat MRI, then it may be something that you want to treat because what it shows is that there's some active disease going
on. Well, so doctor, do some people get transverse myelitis and just keep it just that way? It doesn't progress, doesn't go back. You know.
Absolutely. If it's it can be a one-time viral infection, and it goes away.
Okay. Rob, you've had your chance. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, bye-bye. Let's go to Sam in Beckett. Sam in Beckett, go.
Hi. I have a friend who's a gal who has MS, and she's not a smoker. I know you talked a bunch about that at the beginning of the show. I was just wondering if her habitual use of marijuana would have similar effects. I know that, like, overall for health, it's not necessarily the best thing for you, but I was just wondering if it related to MS in any known way. I'll listen out there.
I don't think the progression of MS has been looked at as a function of marijuana smoking. My opinion about marijuana smoking with multiple sclerosis is that I think it's not the best thing because we know that about 60% of people with multiple sclerosis have cognitive issues, and the studies that I've read show that the marijuana makes those cognitive issues worse in multiple sclerosis, despite the fact that some people feel that there's modest benefit in terms of spasticity using marijuana. There are multiple drugs that are currently available for that reason, and so overall it's not something on my radar.
Okay, and we're making some real good progress here. 1-800-348-2551, two free phones open. We've got a Lee in Ulster. Lee, welcome back.
Hi. I have a question specifically about the work that you were doing, looking for environmental triggers in autoimmune disorders.
Yes.
Is there a clearinghouse for that information? I mean, if you come up with something interesting, is there any place where that goes for different diseases? I have a sister where this stuff is vetted in a way where some determination is made about something being bad for you in general.
Yeah, clearinghouse is probably the referee journals that we all read and love and the conferences we go to. There's no specific clearinghouse other than the mass of information that's out there on the internet. But in terms of environmental triggers,
it's
we know
so
that.
So uncoordinated, though, Doc. You know, that's the thing. I mean, there's you type 100,000 responses, and you don't know where to go to get sort of an overview of something.
And some of it is wrong.
I think the Without a doubt, one of the best websites that I recommend to all my patients is the National MS Society website. They do an absolute fabulous job of screening all the new research, and that's where I send all my patients, and I would send you there as well.
Lee and Ulster, you've had it. We're going
Bye.
To the next one. Thanks, Lee. Let's go to Rich in New Paltz. Rich, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I see everyone's asking questions about, you know, specific things with MS. Can you give us kind of like a general step back, a broader kind of picture of like some of the initial symptoms and things that are associated with MS so we would know whether someone, you know, we're familiar with might have MS?
Sure, that's a great question. So loss of vision in one eye, which is called optic neuritis, is often the presenting symptom that patients present with.
Oh, that's interesting.
That in conjunction with difficulty with walking, perhaps, trouble with bladder, trouble with numbness or tingling. It could be very, very subtle cognitive effects. Not a very well appreciated factor, but most people actually have cognitive events before their first presentation. So it requires a high degree of suspicion on your docs as patients and people of this world. If we notice something's not quite right, it behooves us to insist that our doctors find out what's wrong.
But, you know, some of those that you just mentioned sound suspiciously like diabetic syndromes also.
They could. This kind of nerve damage is unilateral. That is, it hits just one eye at a time.
Uh-huh.
And so diabetes is generally a symmetric disease.
Yeah,
it'll cause numbness and tingling on both sides at the same time, mm-hmm. generally in the toes first. This MS thing hits the brain. It'll hit the eye. It'll hit the cervical cord. You kind of know it when you get it.
I got it. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Right. Okay. So now we'll go to Dennis in Williamstown. Dennis in Williamstown, you're there.
How you doing? So on Radiolab a couple of weeks ago, they were talking about a show on parasitology, and they said that tapeworms were useful in treating multiple sclerosis, as well as asthma and allergies. I just wonder if you could comment on that. I know it sounds pretty far-fetched. But
well, anyway. It's actually not far-fetched. These studies were done in Latin America, and mm-hmm. somehow the tapeworm dampens down the immune system. It's kind of almost like a vaccine in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me think of almost a new avenue about where treatments are going in the future. They may mm-hmm. be going to very, very disease and patient-specific triggers. That is, there are studies now which show and vaccine treatments in place where they take out your own activated T cells and clean them up a bit, and then inject them back into you very slowly in an attempt to desensitize your immune system from attacking itself. And so what the tapeworms, they feel, are doing is something very, very similar. And it's not far-fetched, and it's a great question.
And when they find out
what... slows it down, the progress of MS, or preventive? Or
yes, very dramatic studies, stuff that... not quite ready for prime time yet in the U.S. It's going to have to go through FDA and trials and turn it into a drug. But definitely it gives us a clue that there is a lot more out there than we know.
So we have to find out what's in the tapeworm that creates the effect, and then you make that into a medicine. Is that what
yes.
you're saying? Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Dennis.
Okay. Yeah. Bye.
All right. Let's go to Lauren in Monterey, Massachusetts. Lauren, you're on.
Hi. I've had multiple sclerosis since 1995, and I've been taking Copaxone since then.
Yep.
And the nice thing about Copaxone is now instead of every day, I can take it just 3 times a week.
Yep.
But I still wonder if some of the by-mouth medications would be another better choice, but I feel good, and do I need to take anything?
I don't think we all understood the question to some degree, Alan, because there's a question of, isn't Copaxone a by-mouth medication?
No, it's a subcutaneous shot.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
And right. It used to be every day, and now it's 3 times a week.
And you self-inject?
Yes.
Okay.
So there's been a resurgence of new medications. Now there's 3 oral medications, and there's 4 or 5 injectable medications. And the important thing to know about changing medicines is that if a medicine is working for you,
mm-hmm.
That is, you're not having clinical events. You're not having new things that you feel are going wrong with you.
Right.
And on MRI scanning, you don't see any new lesions.
I don't see new lesions, but my first MRI was textbook MS, and I have lots of lesions. And you'd think I should be so sick, and I'm not.
Well, it may mean that the Copaxone is working for you. Mm-hmm. And we change medicines only when there's a definite need to change. That mm-hmm. is, either the person is tired of injecting themselves. We call that injection fatigue because mm-hmm. it can cause symptoms. However, the new formulation you mentioned is certainly better than every day.
Mm-hmm.
And only if there's new lesions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a basic tenet. It's if it ain't broken, don't fix it.
Lauren, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
That is a very interesting question. Somebody, a couple of calls back, mentioned parapsychology. And that put off a warning bell in my head, which is, do we think that there's any relationship between patient attitude and increased onset?
We know that stress influences the immune system. A perfect example that perhaps a lot of us can experience or have experienced or have seen in loved ones is when you get stressed, the cold sore comes out.
Sure.
So what's happening there? We know that our psychological state is affecting our immune system. These viruses are latent in us. They're hanging out in there waiting to come out. And so we know that that's a known phenomena. In terms of attitude, the patients that I've seen do best with multiple sclerosis are the ones that are highly functioning in terms of keeping their jobs as long as they can, keeping their attitude about friends and family, not being embarrassed about their disease. Those are the patients that do best.
Interesting. Okay. We are talking to Dr. Alan Gerber, neurologist with Albany Medical Center's Neuroscience Institute. Let's go to Penny in Pittsfield. That's PP, that's alliteration. Go ahead, Penny.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband has been developing symptoms for about the past 6 years, and he has gone to a neurologist down at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, and they thought that at first it was Charcot-Marie-Tooth, and then they discovered that he had monoclonal gammopathy. And now they're not putting a name on what exactly it is that he has. He has trouble with his balance. He has trouble walking. And it is now coming up above his waist into his hands. He can't open the lid from a jar. He can't tear open a package. And they want to start some treatment next week. They want to take gamma globulin from multiple people, put it together, wash it, and infuse it into him in 5 infusions. And I was wondering what you thought about that. They're not saying it's going to cure it. They're not saying that it's going to stop the progression of the disease. You know, I was wondering what your thoughts were about this.
I think, Penny, that discussion is probably not going to go over so well with the general population that we're talking to. And I think that I'm not going to comment on that. It's such a specific situation with your husband, and I'm not sure what he has.
Hey, Penny, good luck with that. We're sorry we can't do more for you. Thanks again. All right, let's go to Rick in Rosendale, our old friend. Okay, Rick, you're on.
Hello, doctor and doctor. I have a question in reference to differentiating Lyme disease from these other neurological disorders, especially given that the current Lyme tests, the two that are done, the ELISA and the Western blot, are really only about 50% effective in being accurate. So I'm wondering how you differentiate, given that challenge of these inaccurate tests, how do you differentiate from these other neurological disorders with Lyme disease?
It's actually quite easy, Rick. The characteristic MRI lesions of Lyme disease are very kind of small, scattered white matter lesions, whereas the lesions of multiple sclerosis are very, very characteristic. They involve particular parts of the brain. They have a particular shape, and there is very, very little doubt whether someone has MS or Lyme. And the accuracy of the two tests you mentioned don't really come into play here. And so if there's any question in your mind about whether you or someone you love has MS or Lyme, take him to an MS specialist.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it. All right. And we are going to take a short break. We are going to be right back.
Support comes from Middletown Medical's Pediatric Express, walk-in urgent care for children in Chester with a pediatrician available weeknights until 9 p.m. MiddletownMedical.com. Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. Midwives of the Hudson Valley and Capital Region, offering women's health care, maternity care, and home birth services throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital Regions. Midwives support WAMC.com. United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, New York. Live United, Give, Advocate, Volunteer. United Way, GCR.org. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. And Windy Hill Farm Nursery, Orchard, and Garden Shop, Great Barrington, offering pick-your-own and fresh-picked apples from their orchard and Windy Hill's unpasteurized, all-natural sweet cider blend, WindyHillFarmInc.com.
1-800-348-2551. Ann in Albany, you're on. Okay, Ann, go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have a relative who has ALS, and his ALS is progressing, I would say, moderately quickly. Are you aware of any new medications, treatments, more findings that we can talk about?
Ann, I have an excellent idea for you. We have an excellent neuromuscular clinic at Albany Med.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Weimer and Dr. Murnane, they are experts in this field, and I strongly recommend that you guys see them.
Weimer?
Yes.
Is that W-E-I-M-E-R?
Yep.
And what was the other doctor?
Murnane. They are Albany Med specialists in neuromuscular disease, and they can help you.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate
it. Thank you for your help.
All right. Let's go to Gary in Schenectady. Gary in Schenectady, you're on.
Thank you. Great program, doctors. I just want to give a clarification on a previous caller. I, too, heard the Radiolab program on parasites and connection to autoimmune diseases. The parasite in question was hookworms, which used to be, not tapeworms, but hookworms, which used to be very common in the South, as you know, when people walked around more barefoot and there were not indoor plumbing toilet facilities. The study that was brought up by this person who's been engaged, has helped 85 people, infection with hookworm and whatever they had, as things like Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, other autoimmune diseases, within 2 or 3 weeks they cleared up tremendously. So apparently hookworms are a little bit more than a parasite, but I wanted to make that correction. I'm very sure from that radio lab.
Gary, thank you for that correction. Appreciate
you
it.
You bet. Yep, right. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Chris in Troy. Chris, you're on.
Hi. My question is, to what extent can gluten or dairy or sugar lead to symptoms of MS or elimination of those slow progression?
Well, we know that persons with MS do worse if they're overweight. So we know that sugar, if leading to being overweight, will make MS worse. In terms of changing diet, as I mentioned, there are a very small percentage of people that have MS that also have a gluten enteropathy. And so removing that gluten from the diet perhaps will help
them. What does that word
mean,
Alan, enteropathy?
Well, the stomach is involved. The intestines are involved.
I see, okay.
It's an autoimmune condition of the gut.
Okay. So, anything else on that?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Bye-bye. Let's go. First of all, I want to read something we just got over the Internet. By the way, there are lots of free phones now. 1-800-348-3551. 2551. Don't go to sleep tonight, and in the middle of the night, wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning, smack yourself on the side of the head, and say, we had a great expert on, neurologist on today, and I didn't ask my question when Alan told me that there were free phones. Okay, quick question. Smoking around age 15 increased incidence. Does this statistic include both males and females?
Yes, it does, Alan.
Okay, so that takes care of that one. Okay, and now we're going to go to Steve in Woodstock. Stephen Woodstock, you're on.
Hi. Hey. Oh, let me turn off my radio here.
Yeah, that's a first rule of being on the Vox Pop, because there's a seven-second delay. So if you think you're listening on the air at the same time, you're actually listening like Superman 7 seconds later, which is why he had to
fly. I actually wanted to hear myself, but I guess I'll skip that.
Yes, I think so. Go ahead.
One last thing,
Steve, before you go. You can always hear the whole show, which will be posted at WAMC.org. So if you want to hear yourself, you can do that. Go ahead, Doc.
Oh, my thanks. A friend of mine recently had leukemia, and they gave him a bone marrow transplant from his brother, and he's better now. And my thought was, if this is an autoimmune disorder, is it possible to get rid of your immune system and replace it by a bone marrow transplant and start fresh again, and then it wouldn't attack the myelin anymore?
Steve, that is not only a great question, but you've hit on the forefront of what's happening in MS treatment. So you've heard about stem cells. Well, this is it. So what happens is you have some of your bone marrow removed, and then you're either given high-dose chemotherapy or radiation therapy that destroys your existing immune system, and then your old immune system is put back in you. Hopefully, it regenerates to a state where it will not attack yourself, and that's the basis of stem cell therapy.
Okay, so I want to get this straight. You take out the bone marrow, but you don't radiate the backbone. You radiate the stuff you've taken out. Is that what you're saying?
No, you radiate the person.
Oh, you radiate the person.
Yes,
okay.
you destroy.
So why do you take out the other stuff?
You knock out your existing immune system.
Right.
You keep part of it. You clean it up a bit and put it back in. And it, when it repopulates, the hope is that it won't cause activated T cells to attack your own myelin.
And how have you treated, as you just said, the stuff you took out?
I don't know exactly that method.
Yeah.
They're somewhat proprietary. They're being done. There's several centers around the world doing it. In Sweden, they're doing it. They're doing it down at NYU in Canada. This is the basis of stem cell therapy.
We'll curse them if they're proprietary and they won't tell us what's going on. Okay, we're done with Steve, right? Okay, now we go to Valerie in Highland. Okay, Valerie, you're on.
Yes, hello. Hello, Dr. Gerber. Hi. I just want to ask, did you have an office in Poughkeepsie years ago?
Yes, I did, Valerie.
Hi, Dr. Gerber. I was a patient of yours before. Okay, now I know where you're at. Anyway, my question is, I've had two MRIs that have shown white spots around my brain, and I have something that they're now describing as REM disease disorder, where when I'm sleeping at night, I'm acting out, I'm talking, I'm lashing out, I'm running into walls. And they said that's because I'm not controlling my muscles. My muscles aren't turning off. Is this related to MS?
Not generally. You were mentioning that you have REM sleep disorder. These are this is a condition where you act out your dreams. And you have to be very careful with that you don't get hurt. But not generally thought to be related to multiple sclerosis.
What do you mean act out your dreams?
Yeah, like...
I'm actually thinking that I'm up and I'm living through an experience and I'm like hitting, trying to get out the bed, trying to run, where I'm not in control of my muscles at all.
Valerie, you need to see an expert in sleep medicine.
Yeah, that's right.
I've gone through the sleep study, but the sleep doctors specialize in pulmonary, and I'm told that mine is not related to pulmonary. It's dealing with... neurological issues.
A lot of the pulmonary docs who specialize in sleep medicine, they've gone through training in this, and they're the ones that you want to see. Albany Med has an excellent sleep doctor through the pulmonary department as well.
Thank you, Valerie.
Okay.
Let's go to Kathy and Liberty. Kathy and Liberty, you're on.
Hi, I have two quick questions. One, can marijuana be connected with the onset of MS?
Now, we had that question before, but let's go over it again.
Oh, I didn't hear
no,
it.
That's okay.
No problem. Okay. Not generally thought as a trigger to MS, but possibly a modifying factor. The adverse effects of smoking will go with marijuana smoking versus tobacco smoking. They have a lot of carcinogens in it, as well as other substances.
And what's the other part of your question?
The other question is, have you seen MS presented first with what's called cyclical vomiting disorder?
Not syndrome. Not generally a common presentation.
What is cyclical vomiting, Kathy?
My niece had this where for up to a year, every month during her menstrual cycle, she would start vomiting for days. Mm. I mean, she wasn't able to work. She really was just sick and lost about 60 pounds in a year.
Now, does she have MS?
Yeah, and then after that, she was diagnosed with MS.
I see.
And she also was a smoker of marijuana pretty regularly. So, her symptoms seem to decrease when she doesn't smoke. That makes a lot of sense to everybody. And since she's been treated for MS, the cyclical vomiting has really it's not completely gone, but it's mostly gone.
Okay. Hey, Kathy, we're sort of running out of time. We thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye.
Let's go to Marie in Orange, Massachusetts. Marie, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. General joint pain that I've had essentially all my life. Now, as I'm getting older, it's getting worse, specifically in the joints in my fingers and the joints in my toes.
Now, do you have MS, Marie?
No, I don't.
Okay, we're going to sort of handle this today on an MS basis. I hope you don't mind. We'll have neurologists on, believe me, who will talk, and rheumatoidologists and others who will talk to you about this. Thank you, Marie. Appreciate your understanding.
Okay, bye.
Okay, let's go to Tracy in Woodstock. Okay, is it Tracy?
Trace,
so sorry. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a 25-year survivor of another autoimmune disease, AIDS. And my question for you today is whether any studies have been done with regards to the use of aluminum-based hygiene products such as deodorants or petroleum-based products such as cosmetics, since the incidence of MS development in women is 3 times greater than in men, and these are products that are used more by women than men.
That's an excellent question. What we know is that often various things can trigger the immune system. The interesting thing about MS that's not fully understood but is being worked on is that why is it the myelin is the target of this immune response? And what we think is some kind of situation called molecular mimicry, where there's something about the trigger, whether it's in the case of a metal or a virus or a bacteria, that looks like a piece of the myelin. So the immune system essentially gears up to attack this antigen that we call, in this case, what you're talking about is possibly a heavy metal. Or a virus, and inadvertently also attacks our own myelin. So we don't fully understand the mechanism of how that would happen. We're working on it in terms of different parts of the immune system that present different antigens to our T cells, that whose job it is to treat cancers or
and that would immune system. I'm sorry, and that Alan would explain the women men thing.
It's possible. Anything that's more we don't know. It's possible.
Because there are so many more women, right? You've said that.
It is possible.
Yeah. Gerald, anything else? Oh, I think he left. Yeah, Gerald left. Don't hang up until I tell you to. Gerald, you're on.
Right. There was an article published in Science News about a year ago. Title of the article is Old Parkinson's Drug May Have New Tricks. And the drug was called benztropine. And the researchers at Scripps Institute in La Jolla published their results in Nature October last year. And they were finding good results testing this on mice against some mice with a disease that resembles multiple sclerosis. The question is this in the mainstream now? Has anybody followed up on this?
And I want to add, Gerald, to your question, your very good question. How come we read stuff in the paper and then we never ever see anything about it again?
Right. I agree with you, Alan. But I read Science News every issue, and I weed those things out pretty much. This is above average in terms of sounding like they really are onto something here. I'll read the concluding.
No, don't, because we
half sentence. Half sentence, Alan. The animal symptoms improvement with benztropine resulted from rebuilding of the myelin sheaths, not from suppressing the animal's immune systems. So I was wondering if this has been made its way to the medical profession yet, or if it's already forgotten.
No, but you bring up a very interesting point, which is why myelin doesn't regenerate. We know that after a head trauma or after MS, there's often an attempt of our own stem cells that live in our brain, that line the ventricles, the lining of the brain, to try to fix the damage. And for some reason, there are agents that block that remyelination. And there are currently drugs, anti-lingo is one that is under investigation to try to allow for the brain to remyelinate. And it may be that what you've hit on with the article that you mentioned is doing something very, very similar.
Okay, Gerald, that's it. Thank you very much. Let's go to Barbara in Saranac Lake. Barbara, you're on.
I have a question that mirrors one posed by somebody earlier with the right. Guillain-Barré concomitantly with transverse myelitis, which I had about 12 years ago. The initial onset resulted in severe numbness up to about the chest. And one physician, more of a GP, called it Guillain-Barré, and a neurologist after, and incipient MS. And a neurologist after an MRI says, so this is transverse myelitis, but was never conclusive. Number one, is there any reason to perhaps pursue a more aggressive treatment because there's still tingling in the feet and such?
The
never
tingling
quite went away. And are there any dietary prohibitions when you want to keep it from becoming MS, as the GP said?
Okay, yep. Barbara, we got to answer because we're getting out of time here. Go ahead.
So the quick answer is the symptoms that you're having in the feet are probably just a result of that episode of transverse myelitis. I would treat that very symptomatically, and I would keep
meaning
it
what,
away.
Symptomatically?
Well, there are medicines that will quiet down the tingling,
okay.
Several medicines like that. And so keep a good eye on your overall condition. Follow up with a neurologist to see if this transfers into anything more serious.
Okay. Thank you, Barbara. And let us go very quickly. Bob, we only have a couple of seconds for you. What do you got to say?
Could you comment on the effectiveness of a ketogenic diet on the progression of MS?
Ketogenic diet is generally thought to be effective in treating certain forms of epilepsy. So there are not many studies in terms of how it affects multiple sclerosis. However, I'm sure studies like that may be coming down the pike.
Alan, what is ketogenic?
It produces a set of ketones,
yeah, yeah.
Which is a byproduct of sugar metabolism.
Well, Bob, thank you for your call. Sorry we can't give you more time. And we are out of time. And somewhere, it tells me what to read when we're out of time. It says here, I want to thank Dr. Alan Gerber for joining us today. Support for Medical Monday comes from Toprosyn, natural medicine creams designed to provide relief of gardening aches and pains, sore backs, and poison ivy. Toprosyn.com. Thanks to our wonderful engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell Esquire for answering the phones. Our producers, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Shartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. Now, stay tuned for a news update, some nice theme, and maybe Zach will find us a couple of promos to play. Thank you.